Dès qu'on évoque les stratégies de réseautage ou networking en B2B, le nom qui viendra aux lèvres de la plupart d'entre nous sera immanquablement LinkedIn. Quoi de mieux que d'en comprendre la dynamique en tant que plateforme de réseautage professionnel au travers du témoignage d'un formateur de consultant, également expert de cette plateforme, Daniel Alphon, qui est basé à Tel Aviv et a aussi étudié en France. Daniel est auteur du livre intitulé « How to build a LinkedIn profile for business success ». Pour la plupart d'entre nous, dans le domaine du marketing ou du conseil B2B, c'est une excellente lecture sur ce que LinkedIn est devenu et son avenir. J'ai interviewé Daniel pour en savoir plus sur le futur de LinkedIn et du networking B2B en général.
Des interviews, des chiffres, des faits, des études, pas de blabla. Ce sont les podcasts de Visionary Marketing, disponibles sur toutes les bonnes chaînes de balado-diffusion.
Bonjour, je suis Yann Gourianec, vous écoutez bien les podcasts de Visionary Marketing. Le sujet du jour, LinkedIn est-il une plateforme de networking B2B ou un outil de vente? Avec mon interview de Daniel Alphon depuis Tel Aviv. J'ai interviewé David en anglais, cette version est en français. Vous retrouverez le podcast en anglais en version originale à la fin de cet enregistrement. N'hésitez pas à sauter le passage français si vous parlez la langue de Shakespeare. LinkedIn est ce que vous voulez qu'il soit pour votre organisation. Si vous êtes une entreprise en hypercroissance et que tout ce qui vous intéresse est de trouver des talents, c'est Daniel qui parle, alors vous devriez vous concentrer sur le partage des offres d'emploi et vous assurer que vos employés recourent aussi à leur réseau pour parrainer des candidats. Si vous êtes un éditeur de contenu ou un expert du marketing, vous devez vous focaliser sur les fonctions de réseautage de la plateforme. En résumé, LinkedIn est ce que vous voulez en fonction de votre objectif. La question de savoir ce que vous voulez y faire est une question simple et directe que beaucoup d'utilisateurs de LinkedIn ne se posent même pas. Quelle est votre principale priorité en matière de marketing? Recruter, publier, obtenir plus de vues? Ou bien avez-vous besoin de recommandations? Il se peut que vous y alliez presque exclusivement pour publier du contenu, mais vous pourriez aussi l'utiliser pour le networking en B2B. Si votre service marketing produit du contenu de haute qualité, alors tirer parti de LinkedIn pour lui donner plus de visibilité est aussi une excellente idée. Cela demande un peu de coordination et ne peut pas se faire de manière descendante. Comment réussir commercialement en B2B? En vendant directement ou en réseautant? Une bonne façon de voir les choses consiste à se placer, c'est toujours Daniel qui parle, en haut de l'entonnoir des ventes. Les transactions ne se font pas directement sur LinkedIn, sauf exception. Cependant, la plateforme de Microsoft peut servir à sensibiliser davantage de personnes à votre solution par le biais d'un webinaire ou une démonstration. Ensuite, elles prendront contact avec vous en dehors de LinkedIn. Il faut que les gens trouvent votre solution et comprennent en quelques secondes que c'est quelque chose d'intéressant. Quand je regarde votre profil et que je vois que nous avons un certain nombre de relations en commun, nous dit toujours Daniel, alors ce que je pense de ces personnes affectera et influencera mon opinion de vous. Si j'ai une haute opinion d'eux, même si je ne leur demande pas leur avis, alors une partie de leur aura se transmettra à vous. Dernièrement, alors que je faisais une formation pour KPMG, nous dit toujours Daniel Alphon, j'avais mentionné trois points clés qui, je pense, pourraient être pertinents. Lorsqu'un employé de votre entreprise partage ou aime ou commente, je dénombre trois dimensions à ce partage. La première, il s'agit de la façon dont les autres perçoivent cette action. Admettons que nous soyons déjà en réseau et que je vois que vous aimez un certain contenu. Dans de nombreux cas, le fait de « liker », comme on dit dans le langage, est perçu comme un facteur de confiance le plus faible parmi vos interactions. Cela ne signifie pas que vous avez lu ce contenu, cela peut simplement vouloir dire que vous aimez la personne qui l'a publié. Le partage a plus de valeur aux yeux des autres personnes. Si ce partage est l'œuvre d'un employé, je peux l'encourager à ne pas se contenter de partager, mais à ajouter quelque chose de personnel. Il peut s'agir d'une phrase expliquant pourquoi cela est si intéressant, ou pourquoi au contraire il n'est pas d'accord avec l'affirmation de l'auteur. Si vous décidez de partager le contenu de quelqu'un d'autre, cela signifie que vous en avez une haute opinion. Il est logique de prendre quelques secondes de plus et d'ajouter votre point de vue. Le contenu devient alors plus authentique et plus intéressant pour le lecteur. Le troisième facteur est l'algorithme. C'est le secret le mieux gardé de LinkedIn, on ne peut rien en faire. Il ne vous reste donc que les deux autres éléments. Certaines informations qui circulent évoquent que LinkedIn n'a pas une haute opinion des partages parce qu'il considère qu'il s'agit de duplication de contenu et non de marketing. Le contenu publié, repartagé par les employés, peut obtenir des vues supplémentaires limitées, alors que si vous l'avez seulement aimé ou commenté, LinkedIn le montrera à moins de personnes. Admettons que nous avons un employé qui ne se contente que de repartager des contenus tiers et ne fait rien d'autre. Aux yeux de l'algorithme, cela ne vaut pas la peine de le montrer à 500 personnes supplémentaires. Nous ferions mieux de tirer parti des actions que les utilisateurs sont naturellement disposés à faire, plutôt que d'essayer de contourner un algorithme que personne ne connaît vraiment et qui va changer de toute façon dans les prochains jours ou semaines. Question de Visionary Marketing, David Hughes, qui est très suivi sur LinkedIn, a posté quelque chose à propos de ce qu'il appelle la poll, comme sondage en anglais, pollution, de la pollution des sondages. Il y a des sondages partout, est-ce que nous allons devoir donc en fabriquer en permanence ou est-ce qu'il faut au contraire arrêter? Dites-nous ce que cela signifie. Ces sondages sont tellement présents, nous dit Daniel Alphon, qu'à un moment donné, les gens vont en avoir assez. Nous avons peut-être même déjà atteint ce point, nous dit-il. Concentrons-nous sur le fait d'être intéressant pour nos clients et nos publics B2B. Avant d'appuyer sur la gâchette d'un sondage, nous devons nous demander pourquoi nous le partageons. Il peut y avoir plusieurs raisons à cela. Essayez de vous poser une question simple avant de partager ce sondage. Ce contenu et sa question sont-ils si pertinents que vos relations seront tentées d'aller voir la réponse dans le vote? Je crains que la plupart des gens et des créateurs de contenu trouvent que produire un tel contenu sur une base quotidienne ou même hebdomadaire est très difficile. Ainsi, un sondage intéressant par mois ou par trimestre vous apporterait plus d'engagement que 5 sondages chaque semaine. Nouvelle question de Visionary Marketing. Certains déploient tous leurs efforts pour créer un livre blanc de 70 pages, mais lorsque nous le postons sur LinkedIn, nous ne pouvons pas obtenir un grand nombre de vues sauf si on insère dans notre publication un sondage. Quel conseil à $1 million donneriez-vous au consultant lambda pour obtenir des vues à la mesure de son travail? Réponse de Daniel Alphon. Laissez-moi essayer de vous proposer un certain nombre de conseils et peut-être que quand vous mettrez toutes ces propositions ensemble, elles formeront la réponse à $1 million. Premièrement, trouvez une citation, mettez en évidence une image et faites quelque chose de plus convivial. Deuxièmement, les utilisateurs ne vont pas nécessairement consommer un contenu qui compte 70 pages. Si vous essayez ce que j'ai suggéré, vous verrez qu'une demi-douzaine de citations ou de chiffres intéressants, par exemple, susciteront beaucoup plus de réponses et d'engagement que, par exemple, la page 43 du livre blanc. Troisièmement, lorsque vous partagez un contenu de curation, comme on dit dans le métier, l'idée n'est pas que les gens le consomment sur LinkedIn, mais que davantage de personnes découvrent le contenu par eux-mêmes. Permettez-moi de suggérer 2 autres moyens. L'idée initiale que nous avons tous est d'aller sur la page d'accueil de LinkedIn et de partager un contenu tout frais sorti du frigo. Mais lorsque vous avez passé tant de temps à le créer, il y a un autre endroit pour le mettre. S'il s'agit d'un contenu évolutif, il pourrait être intégré à votre profil, le profil du consultant. Cela permettrait de s'assurer que tous ceux qui visitent votre profil voient ce PDF ou la couverture de ce PDF. Rien que cela, à long terme, vous aidera à obtenir plus de téléchargements ou de vues qu'en essayant de le partager avec la terre entière. Enfin, si vous ne voulez pas vous reposer uniquement sur vos relations, il existe une autre fonctionnalité offerte par LinkedIn, les groupes LinkedIn. Pour chaque consultant ou prospect avec lequel vous êtes connecté, il pourrait y avoir des dizaines d'autres prospects intéressants avec lesquels vous n'allez pas vous mettre en réseau directement, mais qui pourraient consommer ce contenu. C'est là que les groupes sont utiles. Utilisez votre profil et celui de votre personnel pour mettre en évidence le contenu permanent, pas le webinaire de la semaine prochaine, mais quelque chose pour lequel vous avez travaillé dur. Cela pourrait être un moyen de gagner beaucoup en exposition. La deuxième idée serait de s'assurer que tous les membres de votre équipe le partagent aussi. Cela doit en outre être fait à des moments différents. Autre question de Visionary Marketing, un consultant ou un vendeur moyen qui ne travaille pas nécessairement en équipe, doit-il revenir à la case départ et commencer à construire un réseau ou une communauté? Réponse de Daniel Alphon. Oui, il le devrait. On peut essayer d'adopter le mode créatif de LinkedIn, même si cela pose quelques problèmes, ou avoir une stratégie de réseau. Beaucoup d'utilisateurs n'ont pas de stratégie de réseautage, ils ne font que réagir sur les contenus des autres. Lorsque vous leur envoyez une invitation, ils l'acceptent ou non en réfléchissant à court terme, exemple, parce que mon activité actuelle est X, alors je vais accepter cette invitation. Mais si depuis 6 mois je fais autre chose, alors je ne l'accepterai pas. Il est important de se focaliser, nous dit Daniel sur l'aspect réseau des choses. Le réseautage lui-même est bien plus important que LinkedIn à mes yeux. LinkedIn est un outil formidable et puissant, c'est certain, mais ce n'est pas une panacée, ce n'est pas un raccourci pour gérer votre réseau à votre place. Personne n'a trouvé jusqu'ici, sur LinkedIn ni en dehors de LinkedIn, un moyen de rendre le travail automatique, facile, gratuit et fructueux. La question de savoir comment une personne lambda peut différencier son billet de blog parmi 10 000 autres préexistait à LinkedIn. Alors, qu'est-ce qui rend un billet de blog spécial en premier lieu? En trouvant un angle particulier, notre consultant lambda pourrait se concentrer sur 1% de son public et gagner sa vie correctement. Tout le monde devrait se considérer au moins comme un mini-influenceur, nous dit Daniel Lafond, dans sa niche spécifique. Remarque de Visionary Marketing, le réseautage est donc le vrai problème pour un consultant. Il doit se rendre compte qu'il faut développer une communauté avant de commencer à vendre sa soupe. Pourtant, on voit ces vendeurs nous envoyer une invitation sur LinkedIn et dès qu'elle a été acceptée, ils commencent déjà à vendre. Réponse de Daniel Alphon. Les consultants qui sont capables d'aider ou d'éduquer leur public sont en meilleure position que les autres qui ne le font pas. Je ne pense pas qu'il faille avoir une personnalité propre à LinkedIn. Après tout, notre personnalité dans la vie réelle préexiste. LinkedIn peut toutefois refléter les meilleurs aspects de l'identité professionnelle d'une personne. Mais comme le dit le dicton, on ne peut pas tromper tout le monde tout le temps. En d'autres termes, si votre personnalité sur LinkedIn est fantastique et que les personnes qui vous rencontrent lors d'un appel Zoom ou en personne pensent que vous êtes un crétin, alors ce qui fait foi, c'est la vraie vie, parce qu'ils en parleront à tout le monde. Lorsque je vois que vous et moi partageons une connexion mutuelle, alors nous pouvons tous les deux réellement rentrer en contact et croiser nos avis sur les personnes au travers de nos relations existantes. Si un de mes amis me dit que je devrais vous parler et si je lui fais confiance, alors même si votre profil LinkedIn est minable, je vous contacterai quand même. Je ne suis pas intéressé par votre présence sur LinkedIn. Je m'intéresse à vous ou à votre entreprise. Cette information peut influencer la façon dont les gens pensent à vous. Au final, elle dicte s'ils souhaitent faire des affaires avec votre entreprise ou non. Sur ce point, si je veux conclure en quelques mots, en fin de compte, ce qui importe n'est pas la façon dont vous maîtrisez LinkedIn. Ce qui importe, c'est la qualité de l'être humain que vous êtes. Ceux de nos lecteurs qui souhaitent en savoir plus sur LinkedIn et réussir dans leurs affaires grâce à ce réseau peuvent obtenir un exemplaire du livre de Daniel sur Amazon. Bon réseautage. Et je vous laisse maintenant en compagnie de Daniel au travers de cette interview en anglais réalisée depuis Tel Aviv.
So I'm here with Daniel Alphon from Tel Aviv. Hi, Daniel. You wrote a book entitled How to Build a LinkedIn Profile for Business Success, which is available on Amazon. And we're going to talk precisely about that, about LinkedIn, what it has become, where it's going, if it's going anywhere, and what your advice to business people. I mean, I've been on LinkedIn for about 18 years. It used to be a platform aimed at networking and just that. And now, gradually, it became a platform for publishing content. It's also a platform for recruitment. It's a platform for salespeople. Sales Navigator is the product that Microsoft is selling or LinkedIn is selling through its platform. So what is it now? What is LinkedIn exactly? And what are your advice to business people around the world?
Okay, that's a great question. And the short or snap answer is LinkedIn is what you want it to be for your business.
Okay.
In other words, if you're in a hyper growth company and all you're interested in is finding talent, then you should focus on sharing jobs, making sure your existing employees and staff are using their network in order to tap into LinkedIn candidates. And if hiring people is not what you're after, if your business is a content publisher, or if you're a solopreneur or a marketing person, then you could focus on the networking aspect. The strength of LinkedIn could come, in my opinion, from just deciding what is it you'd like to leverage LinkedIn for. And mm-hmm. this simple, straightforward question is a question many LinkedIn users do not ask themselves often or at all. It could be that Xu Yan at one point used it almost exclusively, say, for publishing, and now you could use it for networking. But just deciding where you'd like to take your LinkedIn in order to help your business is a question that every business user should ask. What is your top marketing priority? Is it recruiting? Is it publishing? Is it getting more views? Is it getting referrals? Is it getting something else? Let's imagine some of our listeners here, okay? People who listen to the podcast or visit Viz Marketing Info and are interested in the future of content and how B2B business can work. There could be a variety of uses and a variety of case studies.
Okay.
In one company where the marketing department is producing high quality content, then leveraging the LinkedIn platform in order to get more exposure and more eyes on that content is a great idea. It requires some coordination and it can't be top down. In other words, it's very tempting for the CMO or the CEO to tell everyone to share that piece of content or that salesy white paper, whatever it is. But since people are treating LinkedIn as something that belongs to them, you can't get it by force alone. You need to convince them.
Get this, it's pretty personal, and LinkedIn is made for persons rather than businesses. Actually, it's something that strikes me. A lot of businesses come to me and say, how can I use my business LinkedIn profile to publish content? And most of the time it doesn't make sense because content is best published by people and not businesses. But let's get back to this. This title of this book of yours, building a LinkedIn profile for business success. So I understand what you're saying about LinkedIn being everything to all people, but how do you establish business success? So I suppose if you mean business success, it means you want to sell more. I suppose that's what it means.
Yes, I agree. I think it's maybe one way to look at it is at the top of the funnel. Okay. LinkedIn, in other words, would not be the platform where the transaction would take place, but LinkedIn could be and can be the platform where more people are made aware of your solution. And then they need to attend a webinar, or they need to attend a demo, or then they may contact you. Something else will happen outside of LinkedIn, but you can definitely use LinkedIn to gain more exposure and let more people know of your specific solution. Think of it as a simple funnel. Okay. The sales funnel would be awareness and then it would go all the way to a purchase order or business or revenues. And LinkedIn can reflect that. You want people to find about you or your solution.
Okay.
You want them within 2 seconds to understand that something is interesting for them. And then there are all sorts of other aspects. Yes. When I look at your profile and I see that we have a number of mutual connections, then what I think about those people will affect and influence the way I think of you. Okay, if I think highly of them, even if I don't ask them about Yan at all, then some of the stardust would actually be above your head.
Something very important, what you say is you're saying to gain awareness, you have to be, publishing something which is going to be of interest to them and not to you. So, in fact, very often you have to refrain from publishing stuff on products and services and offers and whatnot. So they're very boring. Now, going back to, but having said that, this is not enough because now we're in 2021 and publishing and gaining awareness on LinkedIn in 2021, well, it's not a piece of cake. It used to be a piece of cake, but it's not. It's not anymore. It's an open ground battle. It's where people are grappling for visibility, aren't they? So what is your advice to these people who want to gain awareness and they want to sort of raise their hands and say, hey, I'm here. It's not going to work.
I'm afraid it's not going to work. Let me maybe tell you a little story about a couple of weeks ago. I ran a first physical training I ran in a couple of months for KPMG. And one question I was asked at the end, the management wanted to encourage people to share their case studies and all sorts of things. So I highlighted three different aspects I think could be relevant. When an employee of your firm shares or likes or comments, there are three dimensions to it. One is about the way others perceive that action. Let's say that we two are connected and I see that you liked some content. Then in many cases, liking is perceived to be that like the lowest trust characteristic of your engagement. It doesn't mean that you even read it. It could mean that you like the person who published that content. Mm. Sharing it, mm-hmm. like resharing something, a page, the firm page or someone else has shared, is more valuable in the eyes of many people. But if an employee is doing this, then I would actually encourage them not just to share that, but to add something of their own. And by mm-hmm. adding something of their own, it could be just a sentence. Okay, like maybe explain why you found it so compelling, what you found interesting in the article itself, or even say that you don't agree with a specific claim that the author is making. So if you decide to share someone else's content, then that means you read it, you think highly of it. It makes sense to add, to take a couple of more seconds and add your own perspective to it so it's more genuine and more interesting for the reader.
Okay, and fair enough.
And the third sure. item is the algorithm. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, now we're talking. The algorithm.
Since the algorithm is the... you know, the darkest secret that LinkedIn never actually shares, then we are left with the other two elements. In other words, mm-hmm. LinkedIn says some inside information says that LinkedIn doesn't think highly of shares because it thinks of it as duplicating content. Mm-hmm. In other words, if Viz Marketing has published some content and an employee is resharing it, then LinkedIn will limit the additional views that the person could gain. Uh-huh. Whereas if you only liked it or commented about it, then that would mean yes. LinkedIn would show it to more people. But the important thing to remember is that if we have two employees and one of them is only happy resharing stuff, and he doesn't want to post anything, he doesn't want to comment, he doesn't want to like, but he doesn't mind, or she doesn't mind sharing that content, then even if in the eyes of the algorithm, it's not worth showing to 500 extra people, then you'd better leverage the actions that the people are organically willing to do rather than trying to game the algorithm. Because the algorithm, Jan, as you know, will change. It will change in 2 weeks. It will change in 2 months. And if we're only chasing the algorithm, there's no end to it.
But that's the point, actually. Yeah, we're getting to the nitty-gritty of it. Maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago. Well, maybe it was a little bit more. But that's right about it. Engagement on posts started plummeting. I mean, even people like David Hughes, who wrote Tech Bad Sales, as you know, from Australia, posted something on LinkedIn about this, saying even David Hughes, who's got a huge following on LinkedIn, much bigger than mine. Mm-hmm. And he was posting something saying, oh, anytime I post something, which was with some research, which would be interesting to people on LinkedIn, well, I get no likes, no views at all. But I have to go into what he calls pollution polls. Yeah. Well, so there's polls everywhere. And what is happening here? Do we have to, and I've tried to do this as well, because I was sort of intrigued. At first I thought, well, this is real pollution. And I posted a poll. Do you think that polls are going to kill your LinkedIn? And some people really didn't like it. And they were, I'm going to unfollow you and everything. And then I noticed that I was gaining a lot of engagement, for what it's worth. And then I tried another one. And then I gained something like 35,000 views and 1,000 votes or something like this. And then I tried another one. And it went up to 81,000 views and 1,000 votes. And I tried another one yesterday, and I got another 50,000 views. So does that mean that we're going to have to send polls all the time, or is it going to change again? And what's the meaning of all this?
That's a deep philosophical question. And if we go back to the pollution idea you so nicely introduced, then at one point, people are going to be fed up with 99% of the polls. That point may have been reached.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and let's go back to something you said earlier about being interesting for them, for the viewers, or for our audience, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Before we pull the trigger of a poll, we should ask ourselves, why are we sharing this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this content, or is the question itself, so compelling that many of your connections will feel compelled to go and see the answer and vote? And I'm afraid most people and most content creators will not find it easy to produce such content on a daily, week, or even weekly basis.
Sure.
So maybe one really interesting poll a month or a quarter could give you more engagement than a weekly or a bi-weekly or five polls. And
but
you mentioned views.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
With visionary marketing, we're also our own media. So we publish every day what we hope are interesting stories. Well, at least we're working on it. I mean, this one will be turned into a story on visionary marketing. So you may like them or not, but a lot of people do. So fortunately. And we're putting a lot of effort in this. I mean, there's these kind of interviews that we're carrying out at the moment. There's a lot of work on the transcription, on the analysis and the writing and everything. And then we're here and we have to post this thing. I mean, the one I did yesterday was about a white paper. It wasn't a poll. It was a white paper. I mean, it was a 70-page white paper. I mean, the huge, whacking, great thing, the thing that took us a few months to write and interview a lot of people and get a lot of insights, a lot of research, because we hate above everything else is white, all white papers. So we tend to fill them with loads of information and data and everything, so that when once you've finished reading it, you got for your money's worth. But then, you know, it's a bit unfair because you're posting this on LinkedIn and you say, right, okay, I'm going to get, you know, a certain number of views for my efforts. And then it's not going to work. So obviously you have to insert a stupid poll in there, which has got nothing to do with the. But I know it's stupid, isn't it? I mean, I shouldn't need to do that. But this is what you have to do, because if you don't do this, so I agree with you. You don't have to chase and try and circumvent the algorithm, because the algorithm anyway, nobody knows how it works. I'm not even sure LinkedIn does, but. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure they don't, because we've tried quite a few things and then it looks like it's a bit erratic anyway. But still, Okay, you may well say that you mustn't use or you mustn't care about algorithms, but if you don't, it's just not there. And now I'm putting myself in the shoes of not a media like us, mm-hmm. but I'm putting in the shoes of Joe Blogs in the street, the average consultant who's probably not very well connected and is trying to get known and to be, well, is looking for business success, as you say in your book. And so, and then you're caught with this algorithm nonsense and all. What are these guys going to do? I mean, I really feel for them, you know, because we are experts and we're striving. So what should they do? What is your $300 million advice to them?
Okay, let me try and give you a number of nuggets, and maybe all of them together will form the million-dollar answer. One way would be to, even though you worked hard on the 70-page white paper that's substantial, then to serve it on LinkedIn could mean that you reverse engineering and you find a quote and you highlight an image and you do something that's more of a teaser, because people are not necessarily going to consume the content as it is, the 70 pages. And in some cases, when you try it, you will see that finding, say, half a dozen interesting quotes or figures or the introduction or something else is going to be a lot more responses and engagement than page 43 in the white paper.
No, it's okay. Okay, so all right, I understand. What you're saying is, we should go into snackable content.
That's one way to look at it.
But it doesn't work. But it doesn't work. Because I disagree with you. People do not consume snackable content. They're really sick of this. And anyway, it doesn't work on LinkedIn, because we're going back to square zero. When you post something, even though it's interesting, actually it doesn't really matter, be it interesting or not, it doesn't work. Because of this algorithm thingy.
You can, okay. When you share a snackable piece of content, the idea is not for people to consume it on LinkedIn, but the idea is for more people to discover the content itself. And let me suggest two other ways. The initial thought that all of us have is to go to LinkedIn's homepage and share that new piece of content, that fresh daily content or weekly content. But if you've worked so much and if you spend so much time creating that content, then there's another place for it. If it's evergreen content, then that content could be made part of your profile, the consultant's profile. And that means that everyone who would visit their profile or your profile would see that PDF or the cover of that PDF. That alone, in the long run, could gain more downloads or more views than trying to share it across the board, like you said.
Good
and
idea.
Lastly, mm-hmm. if we don't want to rely on our connections only, then there's another feature LinkedIn tries accidentally to kill, and that's the LinkedIn groups.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, they pretty well managed to do that, actually.
Okay, so let's think about it this way: for every consultant you are connected with, or for every prospect that Vision Marketing is connected with, there could be dozens of interesting prospects you are not going to connect with who could consume that mm-hmm. content thanks to groups. So instead of just seeing the sharing as the only way to do it and trying to game the system and gain 0.5 more views, we could have a more holistic way about it. One is to use our profile and our staff's profiles to highlight evergreen content, not next week's webinar, okay, but something that you've worked hard for, then that could be one way to gain a lot of exposure to it. The second idea would be to make sure that everyone on your team is actually sharing it and not just one person.
Yeah, sure, obviously.
And instead of everyone sharing it at 9 a.m., Paris time,
yeah, sure.
Then maybe you could try, and actually you would share it at 9 a.m. Yeah. and your colleague would share it around 1 p.m.
Sure.
and someone else would.
And this is how we circumvented the issue because we worked as a team. But then I'm going back to square zero because the problem is not us, because we know how to circumvent the issue. Because we worked as a team and we asked each contributor to the white paper to comment on the post. And this is how we ended up having 50 plus thousand views and more than 400 downloads without paying anything, so which is not too bad in just one day. But okay, so the issue is not us. I'm trying to think about Joe Bloggs, who's trying to get to be known on LinkedIn. We're influencers, so it's rather easy for us. But I'm trying to, you know, step in the shoes of the average salesman or the average consultant for that matter. And how can they circumvent this issue? How can they do something about it? Should they go back to networking and then go back to square zero and then start building a network and building a community? Well, or at least facilitating a community? Isn't that a good idea?
Yes, it definitely is. And you could at one point mix them by either adopting LinkedIn's creator mode, even though that has some problems, or have a connection strategy. As you know, many people don't have a connection strategy. They just react. So when you send them an invitation, they may accept it or not, but they think about it in the short term. Because now I'm into this, then I would accept your invitation. But if 6 months ago I was into something else, I wouldn't do it. So maybe it's important to get back to the networking aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Networking is far more important than LinkedIn, in my eyes.
Sure.
LinkedIn is the tool. Now, it's a formidable tool. It's very powerful. It's not very user-friendly, but it's just a tool. And there is no silver bullet and there is no shortcut to run your networking. There's no way anyone has found on LinkedIn or outside of LinkedIn to make it automated and easy and free and successful. And the question you raised about how Joe's blog can differentiate itself from 10 or 1,000 other blogs was there before LinkedIn. Okay, so What makes their blog special in the first place? I think that in many cases, finding that special niche would mean that Joe could only focus on maybe 1.3% of your audience, and they would still be able to make a living. They don't have to be, you flatter me by saying I'm an influencer. I'm not sure I am. But everyone should think of themselves as at least a mini influencer in their specific niche. And their specific niche could be that geolocation and these sort of managers in that industry. Maybe you can cram everyone into Bercy and that's all.
I think you've put your finger on it. The real thing that is going to spur business success is not really LinkedIn per se or Twitter or anything else. It's nothing to do with social media. It's something to do with networking, which can, at least before COVID-19 could happen in the real world. Now it's a bit more difficult, but so. Networking is the real issue, and I think this is where Joe Bloggs really has a problem, because their issue is not that they can't use LinkedIn. Their issue is that they can't work with people.
That's a harsh statement.
Well, I mean it's harsh, but it's something that I've come across very often. It's very, very hard, mostly for salespeople, to understand that they have to grow community before they start selling their stuff. You see them on LinkedIn trying to invite you and then trying to sell stuff immediately afterwards, because they haven't understood that.
The consultants that are able to help their audience or to educate their audience mm-hmm. are better equipped and better placed or better positioned, in my opinion, than and LinkedIn could be a great equalizer in the sense that, say, both of us started or set up a LinkedIn account on the same day or some future social media, it doesn't matter, then just deciding what to do with it is something that many people don't actually do. And I don't think you should have a LinkedIn personality. Jan's personality in real life exists. And LinkedIn could reflect it, could reflect mm-hmm. the better aspects of it, the more professional, okay, probably not something you would do on your spare time if it's not related to business. But you cannot fool everyone all the time. I think I'm not sure if it's Lincoln or Jefferson, but you can't fool everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. In other words, if your LinkedIn personality is all shiny and bright and people who meet you in a Zoom event or in real life think you're a jerk, then what wins is real life, because they will tell everyone about it. And when I see that you and I may share a mutual connection, say André Dan is one of our mutual connection,
sure.
then both of us can actually reach out to him and ask him how it's been and ask pertinent questions about the other person. Mm-hmm. And if I trust André and he says, yes, you should definitely speak to Jan, then you know what? Even if your LinkedIn presence sucked, I would do it. And your LinkedIn presence is great. But I'm not interested in your LinkedIn presence. I'm interested in you or your business. And that information can influence the way people think about you and eventually the way people will do business or will not do business with your company.
So if I want to wrap this up in a few words, at the end of the day, what matters is not how you master LinkedIn. What matters is how good a human person you are.
I think that's even better than what I would have thought. And thank you very much. Yes, it's an excellent way to think about it.
Thank you, Dan.
Des interviews, des chiffres, des faits, des études, pas de blabla. Ce sont les podcasts de Visionary Marketing, disponibles sur toutes les bonnes chaînes de balado-diffusion.
Surtout, n'oubliez pas de mettre une bonne note à ce podcast si vous l'avez apprécié.